Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Drummond slams for two. Caldwell Pope, an opportunity for a four-point play.
Well, this is one of the things KCP does so well, coming off those screens.
The Pistons continuing their playoff push. They have won two straight.
You know, not on a one-game thing, if it helped at all. I mean, but Reggie played well, and Ish played well. They both played really well. I thought we had good energy throughout. We have a lot of respect for them, and even when they're down two starters, I mean, the ones things you know about, really since Brett's been here, how hard Philadelphia plays and the energy they bring to the game, that we would need to match that. I think our guys took that to heart. I mean, we had great respect for them.
To have fun, you know, you hear people talking about four-point shots, something that's not about to happen in the NBA, but maybe in an All-Star game. Maybe there's a few spots on the floor where it's a four-point shot. Maybe there's a half-court shot in the last minute that is 10 points. I don't know. I mean, maybe those are crazy ideas. I mean, I encourage people, you know, adam@nba.com. You know, send in your ideas. We will change it by next year, because I think it shouldn't be playoff intensity. The guys should be playing. And I think that's why I don't think it's a millennial Gen X issue. I think they would have more fun. They want to play. They want to compete.
Part of one. It's been a long time since I've been, probably since high school. You know, we had our band play throughout timeouts, things of that nature. So I'm not sure. You know, they said it was doing it for just to get the offensive patient of the game itself. I thought that's a pretty cool idea. Did it work? I don't know. You know, but listen, they can basically do whatever they want, and you know, to see how it go, they try something. So I'm not against that. I mean, we give fans an opportunity just to hear that. You know, the sneakers, the ball, the shot, the moan and grunts, and the players calling out plays, things of that nature. You know, I'm all about authenticity. But also, you know, we know that music is also a part of basketball. You know, the in-game, you know, things of that nature, going to Jumbotron is all part of the game. And, you know, so, I don't know. I've never been a part of it, so I don't know.
Change the flow of the game, it changed everything. You get so used to playing the game a certain way, you know, completely changed that. I think, to me, I think it was disrespectful to everyone from Michael Levine to Rick Welts and all these people who've done these things to change the game, you know, from an entertainment perspective, you know, and give the game a great vibe. That's completely disrespect. You advance things in the world to make it better. You don't go back to what was bad.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Alrighty then, welcome to a Monday afternoon edition of the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo Sports Leader. Hope you're having a great Monday. Appreciate you being with us. We got you until 5 o'clock, and at 5 o'clock drive time, we'll get you where you need to go right here on The Ticket. We got a number of things to get into today. We got NFL scouting. It's a rare time of the year when we have a little bit to talk about from most of the major sports. And if we talked hockey on this show more, we could certainly do that, but I'm not going to. But we have some NFL news because of the Combine wrapping up today. We're going to talk to Scott Petrak, who is in Indianapolis for the better part of last week, talking about some of the great performances that we're seeing there. Haven't heard too many about the, wow, what a terrible underperformance from this guy or that guy, as we have seen in previous NFL scouting combines in Indianapolis. But we're going to get the inside skinny on it from Scott Petrak. He'll talk to us a little bit about the top players, top picks, whether Myles Garrett is a lock now to go to the Cleveland Browns, see what who some of the other, you know, top position players are. What about the quarterbacks? And I separate them from position players. I don't mean to make that sound like pitchers and position players for baseball. But quarterbacks do things differently, obviously. Their tests are different. Which of the big three, Deshaun Watson, Deshaun Kizer, Mitchell Trubisky, shined the brightest in the Indianapolis spotlights? We'll talk to him about that and much, much more. Then we are also going to talk a little college basketball, because championship week is here. As a matter of fact, Mac Style, championship week is very, very exciting because you get a first-round matchup between the UT Rockets and the BG Falcons as the Battle of I-75 is renewed. But in tournament play, which, of course, is very, very big. We'll talk to Paul Keels, the voice of the Buckeyes, about the Big Ten tournament starting as well and kind of get a feel for where they are. As far as the NBA, you just heard a number of things in that montage, including a little bit from the Pistons and Stan Van Gundy, a little bit from the commissioner Adam Silver on the All-Star changes there, considering Steve Kerr, who is also rightly upset by the way the All-Star game was contested or not contested 2 weeks ago. So they've got some interesting thoughts they shared over the weekend we'll get into. Draymond Green and LeBron James on the Knicks' weird little experiment when the Warriors went to Madison Square Garden over the weekend, in which they said no more in-game entertainment, at least for a half. Let's experience it the old school way. And you know what? There's no school quite like the old school. I liked it, which is probably why Draymond Green, and just a member of the millennial generation, that I have so much to teach, and that we all do. We have so much to teach. Draymond Green absolutely hated it. So we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. And then, of course, baseball-wise, we know that spring training is ongoing, but the biggest story to hit spring training is going to be a guy who really probably shouldn't even be at spring training with the big league club. But Timothy Tebow is back in the news because Tim Tebow is going to get at least two starts on the spring training schedule with the big league Mets. Why? Are they really considering promoting him? No, not at all. They just need bodies. It's that simple. They got a bunch of guys going to the World Baseball Classic more than anybody else, and they need bodies. So they're bringing up some of their younger, minor, well, in Tebow's case, not as young. Younger and more inexperienced. That would be the Tebow way. Guys from the minor league camp to play a couple of games with the big league club. He's going to play against the... I know the Astros is the second time around. The Red Sox. He's going to play against the Red Sox and the Astros this week. I believe it's going to be Wednesday, Thursday, with the big league Mets. So that'll be really, really interesting to see if Tim Tebow can go out there and make a name for himself, or if he indeed, and it could very well happen, he goes out there and makes a fool of himself. One of those two things very easily is could happen. So a lot of stuff to get into. I want you to be a part of it, too, at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. You call us and tell us what is on your mind. I want to start with that strange NBA story. What the New York Knicks did at Madison Square Garden. The Knicks decided they were going to go old school for half of a game. And why they did it for just half of the game, I don't know. Is it because you just dip your toe into the water and see what the response is before you go doing anything extreme, like, you know, locking people in for a whole game in this experience? I don't know why they did only a half game, because I liked the idea from top to bottom. And I haven't even experienced it yet, but I know I would like it. And let me explain if you are not aware of what's going on. The Knicks decided that in their first half of the Warriors game against, of the Knicks against the Warriors, a game inevitably won by Golden State 112-105 on Sunday, they decided they were going to turn back the clock. Now, normally, what does that mean? Normally, turn back the clock day means we're going to wear the old uniforms, we're going to, you know, the goofy-looking disco-era sweats and all that kind of sort of thing. That's mostly what throwback means, or turn back the clock day means, in baseball, too, or some of the really old fun stuff. But in this case, they said, no, we're going to turn back the clock for the fans, not for the players. We're going to give them the feel of an old-time NBA game, prior to the advent of all of the histrionics and the themes and the entertainment and the music and the pyrotechnics and the scream team and the loud obnoxious guy yelling, "Everybody clap your hands," and all the other stuff that goes into no more cheer squads and dance crews and all the other things. We're just going to go ahead and give people for a half what it used to be like to watch an NBA game before all of that stuff was created to take your attention away from the NBA game. And at the end of the day, by the way, I think it's a fabulous idea, simply as kind of a reach out, and that's not the right word, but extending a welcome to the older generation fans. So many times I think we get caught up in, and maybe even starts to feel like, the leagues only care about the youth because, you know, the young people, the young up-and-comers are the ones with all the money that we've got to appeal to. And, you know, the old geezers we can let be and not worry too much about. I don't know if that's actually their mindset, but that's just how it feels. And so when they reach out to the older generation and say, this is a pitch back to you. And when you came up, let's show the youngsters what a basketball game was like when you first started coming to Madison Square Garden in the 70s. Let's show them what it was like when you started going to the old Cleveland Coliseum out in Richfield back in the 70s. What it was like when you used to go to the old L.A. Forum, you know, before L.A. brought Hollywood to it. You know the story. So what they did was they said no in-game music, no scream teams, no dance teams. Occasionally you might hear the organ with the dun 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 dun, just to kind of dun 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 dun, just to get a charge out of everybody. And that's why it used to be done. And so what you would do when you were in the game back in the day, and I feel like I'm being get off that my lawn guy again, even though I just did that last week talking about Wilt Chamberlain, talking about Pete Maravich and some of the older players. But in truth, this is what they're trying to do. Maybe they're appealing to the get off my lawn guys. But back in the day, you'd buy your ticket, you'd go into the arena, you'd sit down, and you'd watch the players warm up, and you would talk to the person you came to the game with. And then the players would stop warming up, and then you'd hear the whistles, and then you would see the guys go to the bench, then you would hear the player introductions, and then they would tip it off, and you would watch basketball. And most importantly, you would hear basketball. You would hear the court squeaks of the sneakers. You would hear the ball pounding on the court. You would hear the coaches yelling instructions. You would hear the fans yelling as well. You would hear the officials actually say who the foul was on. And you wouldn't have loud, obnoxious scream teamers all telling you what you have to yell. And you wouldn't hear rap music or other popular contemporary music while your team has the ball. You wouldn't have an artificially piped in guy yelling defense, defense to get the fans yelling defense. If the fans wanted to yell defense, the fans would just damn yell defense. They didn't need to be coached. They didn't need to be coaxed either. You heard the sounds of the game. You saw the sights of the game. That's the way it used to be. And for just a day, they said, let's see how people like it. When the actual entertainment vehicle of the arena that they are in is not the music. It's not the little Asian woman riding a unicycle, balancing a bunch of plates on her feet and then flipping them up and catching them on her head. You do remember that woman, right? We've all seen that young woman doing the plate, not the plate, cups or bowls or something like that up on her head. In other words, the entertainment wasn't taking over or dominating the basketball game. The entertainment was the basketball game. And that's it. So that's what happened for the first half of yesterday's game between the Warriors and the Knicks at Madison Square Garden. And as I mentioned, there were a lot of different reactions. The vast majority of the reactions from the players was negative. They couldn't stand it. Some of the fans thought it was very cool. I personally thought it was very, very cool. Now, I didn't experience it, of course. And, you know, Mike Greenberg was talking about that this morning on Mike and Mike. And if you're watching it on TV, you didn't know any difference because they still had announcers, which is very different from the football game maybe 20 years back that they tried. That might have been even longer. It might have been 30. That might have been late 80s. They tried an experiment in which they did a football game for where you watched it on TV as you would be watching it in the stadium. They didn't give you announcers. They didn't give you play-by-play and color commentators. They didn't give you replays. You just watched it. You heard the PA guy say what the PA guy says, just like you would if you bought a ticket for the game. They wanted to see if people really liked the simplicity of the game, or if they wanted the announcers to tell them every little thing about, you know, second and two, and I think they're going to do this here. You know, and did not work. Did not work. Complaints were far and wide and serious. viewership was way down for that game. Did not work. They never tried it again. This is different. This you couldn't have told if it was different from watching it on TV because they kept the TV announcers there. You only would have known what it felt like in that arena is if you were in that arena. And so, personally, I would love to see this in Detroit. I would love to see it in Cleveland. Personally, I would love to see anything that is just a little bit different. That's just a little bit out there. That is a little bit untried and untested and unmarket tested. Just take it to the people, and especially as a nod to the older generation who remembers how the game used to be when the game was the show. Not the game being incidental to the show that was a DJ's handiwork. How many rap songs, how many pop songs can he fire at you in one, 60-minute period or 90-minute period? So they tried this, and again, as I said, the reactions of the players themselves, not very positive, but nobody was more upset and apparently disrespected by it than you can imagine. Former Michigan State Sparty, Draymond Green. He was the only one who was going to take it to this level.
Changed the flow of the game. It changed everything. You get so used to playing the game a certain way. Completely changed that. I think it was disrespectful to everyone from Michael Levine to Rick Welts and all these people who've done these things to change the game.
What is he talking about? What is he talking about? It disrupted the flow? It disrupted the flow of the game. What, you couldn't move the ball as effectively from one warrior to another because there wasn't Drake in the background? Is that what you're telling me? First, he's telling me it disrupted the flow of the game. Now, it's one thing to say it disrupted the flow. Maybe what he meant to say was, man, I just couldn't quite concentrate because it was so quiet. It was silent. Usually when I'm playing, when it's silent, there's usually music going and there's all kinds of crowd, stuff happening and interactivity going on and I'm able to play that way. So I didn't really like it. He could have said that. Instead, he said it disrupted the flow of the game and, if I heard him correctly, he said something about it disrespecting the game.
Welts and all these people who've done it.
One more time.
I think it was disrespectful to everyone from Michael Levine to Rick Welts and all these people who've done these things to change the game, from an entertainment perspective, and give the game a great vibe. That's completely disrespectful.
Give the game a great vibe is what I think he said, and it's totally disrespecting it if you don't have that. Totally disrespecting. So now, apparently, if you don't play the music, and if you don't have all of the scoreboard histrionics and all of the insanity that surrounds a modern-day NBA game, you're disrespecting the game. Now, again, I know I'm going to sound like Goose Gossage here. And I'm going to sound like Clint Eastwood in the movie, which one did he tell the dude to get off his arm while they pointed a shotgun at him? The car one. Gran Torino. When I say this, but seriously, the game was disrespected when all of the music and all of the sidebar entertainment became the show and the game became secondary. That is disrespecting the game. Not taking the music away where the game becomes center stage, making the game a sideshow. That disrespects the game, Draymond.
You advance things in the world to make it better. You don't go back to what was bad. And so it's like computers can do anything for us. It's like going back to paper.
You advance the world, Draymond Green said, by doing things that are better. You don't go back to doing stuff bad. Apparently, just watching basketball and not having the music blare at you is bad. And he said, computers can do anything. This was like going back to paper. What a terrible thing that is. Paper? Does anybody actually write anymore? What a horrible idea. Draymond Green is like officially mad about this. Not just, man, I thought it was weird. I thought it was a little awkward. He's mad about it.
Why would you do that? So it was ridiculous.
Did you know beforehand that it was going to go like this?
No, I knew right before the game. And it changed everything. That was bad.
Do you think they were trying to unsettle you guys? Do you think they were trying to unsettle you guys a little bit?
I don't.
The report, if you couldn't understand that, said, do you think they were trying to unsettle you guys? Like, I can see that meeting already. Phil Jackson calls together his closest advisors, the brain trust of the New York Knicks, calls in the head coach, probably calls in Carmelo Anthony. So I said, guys, got an idea. What you got, Phil? Well, the Warriors are coming on Sunday, right? Yeah, boy, oh boy, they're going to blow us out. They're great. We suck. Not so fast. Let's throw them off by taking away the music. They don't know what to do then. Mellow. Yeah, but I like music too, bro. Well, we'll practice without music just so that you can get used to it. But they'll never see it coming. What kind of question is that? Did they do it to unsettle you? What's the answer, Draymond?
I don't think they were trying to change us because I think it changed their players too. Did you see that first half? It was just bad, sloppy, all over the place. There was no rhythm to the game. All this stuff make a difference in the game, believe it or not. You get rhythm. That's 5 guys, 7 guys go in and work out at night. You turn on music. It just helps you get into a certain area. It takes you to a certain place. And so I don't think they were doing it to, like, throw us off, but it definitely threw the entire game off. And, you know, they need to trash that because that's exactly what it was.
Draymond. They need to trash it because that's what it was. It was trash. That was Draymond Green's view of the first half of the game without any music or in-game entertainment. How do you feel about it? I'd love to hear from you at 866-240-1065. We're going to talk to Petrak coming up in a minute about some NFL scouting combine. But I would love to have this conversation. Think about it, decide what your take is, and then dial me up at 866-240-1065. Because I'm going to tell you something, and again, I'm going to sound like the old guy. These young millennial generation kids, and that's what most of them are, and I know Draymond Green's a grown man in his 20s, but I'm still going to call him a kid because to me he's a kid. These young millennial punk kids who cannot stand anything to be different from the way they want it. They've never been told no. They don't know how to deal with defeat. They don't know how to deal with something changing. They don't know how to deal with rejection. They don't know how to deal with anything. That upsets them in some way because that's how we've raised them. Honest to God, it is. That's how we've raised them. They are so afraid of doing anything that might challenge them because they've never been told to be challenged before, and they certainly have never been forced to fail before. So it's got to be something is somebody else's fault, and there's got to be something wrong. That's what this is to me. That's what this says. These young punk kids, they just don't know how to handle something that is different from the way they've got it. It's got to be a constant stream of entertainment. Put music in my ears. Put sights before my eyes. Give me something to entertain and engage me so I don't have to be left with my own thoughts. Give me something to engage and entertain me so I don't have to be left with just what I see in front of my eyes. I got to watch the game? Oh, my God. I want to check my phone. Can we get some better Wi-Fi in here, please? I got to check my phone. Can somebody please tell me when to cheer because I don't know on my own? Somebody please tell me when to scream. Somebody please tell me when to clap, clap, clap my hands. Somebody tell me how to do this. Somebody please get me excited. Get a dance team out there to get my blood flowing. I mean, that's just what we created. That's America. That's apostrophe America in 2017. And the Knicks just blew it all up by going back to 1973. And you know what? God bless you, New York Knicks. Love you for it. Absolutely love you for it. Let me get a quick timeout here at the bottom of the hour. We got SportsCenter coming our way. We're going to talk about the combine and more. And I want some of your calls on this too at 866-240-1065 right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
To the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Back indeed, rolling along now at 3:39. Want to get right into the NFL as the scouting combine comes to an end today, and all of the eyes now turn to the Cleveland Browns. What are you going to do with the number one overall pick? Are you going to trade it away again like they've done so many times, or are you going to take the best player in the draft? And is that best player still confirmed to be Myles Garrett? Joining us now, Scott Petrak, who covers the Browns and the NFL out there in Cleveland, Ohio. He's been on the beat for many years, and he's been a very, very good friend of this show. Scott Petrak, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Bob. How are you, bud?
I'm great. How was your time in Indy?
It was good. You know, it's always a good time to get the whole league is in one place. I find that fascinating. You run into a bunch of people. So long days, but it's good to go.
Yeah, well, no doubt long days and a lot of ground to cover while you're there, and certainly for all of the teams as well. Hey, Scott, before we get into some of the details, as I mentioned, about some of the players and the performances, and we saw some tremendous things. We saw the speed record broken for the 40-yard dash, et cetera, et cetera. I want to talk about one guy who wasn't there, because we spent some time last week discussing the absence of Joe Mixon from Oklahoma and why it is that the league is going to allow him to be drafted and allow him to play but not allow him to come to the combine. What was your take on Mixon not being there? The Lions GM, Bob Quinn, was notable in his criticism of the league or of the combine or whoever it is that invites these guys for not having him there, because now they're just going to have to chase him down to interview him, and they're going to have to go to his pro day, et cetera, et cetera. So what was your take on Mixon not being there?
Yeah, I think the league's in a tough spot. It's trying to crack down on domestic violence, which I think we can all applaud. I'm just not convinced they're doing it in the right ways, and they wind up looking hypocritical, you know, because if the guy's going to play in the league, which he is, what difference does it make if he shows up for 4 days in Indianapolis in March? You know, I'm not sure it does matter, and I know that the teams feel like they're at a disadvantage because they don't get to talk to him in one setting, and it becomes a hassle. So, you know, I think they're trying to make some points from a PR standpoint, but it really makes no difference in the long run.
How many teams, if any, Scott, do you think will knock him off of their board simply because they don't want to deal with the PR nightmare of drafting, especially high and promising millions to a guy who, you know, who was on tape doing something as heinous as he was? And to me, his situation was far worse even than Ray Rice's, and Ray Rice's was inexcusable and intolerable. But this one I thought was even worse. So what are you thinking? Do you think there are teams, and have you heard from the Browns? Is Mixon going to be a guy that they just automatically cross off their board?
Well, yeah, and it's not only the heinous of the action, but then you have to worry about, or from a PR standpoint, then you have to worry about, is he going to have another incident?
Right.
And all of a sudden you have to cut him, and you've wasted time, and you've wasted money and energy. So I would think as many as 10 teams, you know, I think that would be the ballpark of teams that say, we're not going to draft this kid. It's not worth the hassle. We've been through this road before. If you're Baltimore, you know, we've been through down this road before. Why go there again? As far as the Browns, you know, we didn't ask him about it specifically at the combine. I know when we talked to Hugh Jackson in the past about guys with, you know, red flags, he tends to keep an open mind. You know, he doesn't like to rule anything out. He's not very strong as saying, we're not going to go there. You know, when he had Art Briles in, you know, the Baylor coach, the disgraced Baylor coach, he had him kind of helping out for a little bit during the season, and Hugh didn't even want to go there. You know, he goes, hey, he's a football coach. I'm trying to give him, you know, I'm open to second chances. So I don't think Hugh would rule guys out. But that becomes an organizational and ownership decision, whether or not you're willing to put up with that. And, you know, the Browns have had some of their off-the-field, you know, guys with off-the-field issues in the past. I'm not sure they'd be willing to go down that road again.
Yeah, and I would really hope that they wouldn't be. If he does get drafted, and you said maybe 10, so that's a third of the team's league, the league's teams, roughly. So two-thirds of them would still say they would draft him. You still think there's going to be a price to pay for him, right? Nobody's going to take him as maybe the third. I think he's been rated by some as the third best, you know, back in the draft behind Fournette and Dalvin Cook. But he's not going to go in the top two or three rounds. Is he to one of those two-thirds of the teams that are still interested in him? I would imagine it's going to be late.
Yeah, I would agree with you there, Bob. I think he pays a penalty. You know, people want to compare it to Tyreek Hill, who had a domestic incident when he was in college. He went in the fifth round. Tyreek was way lower profile than Mixon is. I'm not sure he's the same quality of player, at least in college, as Mixon is. But I think I don't think he gets drafted as high, maybe third or fourth round, you know, and then by then I think the team thinks, man, we might be getting a steal here, and it's worth the risk.
Right, and that's the thing, risk versus reward. What are you going to get from him and versus what, you know, kind of a PR nightmare you could have there? And as you say, what if something happens again? No doubt about it. Scott Petrak joining us as we talk a little bit about the combine. Okay, enough about him who was not there. Let's talk about the guy that everybody was watching, and that's Myles Garrett. Everyone thinks that this is the best player in the draft. I don't think he hurt himself by running a foot. What is he, 271 pounds? He ran a
273, I think.
273. Yeah. He ran a 4.64, which is remarkable for a guy that big. He had a vertical, and correct me if I'm wrong, you were there, but I'm just going by memory from what I had read, somewhere in the neighborhood of 41 inch vertical, bench pressed 225 pounds 33 times compared to former number one overall pick defensive pass rushing phenom Jadeveon Clowney, who did it 21 times. I mean, this guy is kind of making it impossible for him not to be the number one pick, no matter how much he wants to go to Dallas, for example.
Yeah, he had a great couple of days in Indy. He really did, because it wasn't only the workout. You know, I think he did well in the interviews. He said he was going to apologize to the Browns for that video, saying he wanted to get traded to Dallas. I think he came across well. You do have to take a step back. You know, the combine obviously is a focus right now, and it just happened. So, oh my God, look what he did! You know, you have to match it up with the tape. You can't just be blown away by a quick 40-yard dash, because we knew he was going to run well. We knew he's an elite athlete. That shows up on film. It doesn't change the fact that 4.5 of his 8.5 sacks this year came against Texas San Antonio. You know, there's still some issues that you have to get through with this guy. Not to say he's not worth the number one pick. I think my only caveat with Myles Garrett is he a slam dunk number one pick? When you start comparing him with the Von Millers and the Jadeveon Clowneys, you say, okay, let's compare their stats in college. Let's compare this. And he compares favorably with these guys, mm-hmm. but I don't think he's head and shoulders above the draft class like it may look a day after he runs a great 40 time.
It's a great point. But like you said, you got to look at tape. You know, to me, you don't go to Indy if you're a general manager, player personnel director, scout, or anything else, looking for guys that you've not seen on tape and just see them doing these measurable things and say, oh my God, that's a guy that we got to move up our draft board now. It's for looking at tape and saying, okay, now I got to go see him in person and see what his, you know, see what his measurables are, see what he looks like, you know, in shorts and a t-shirt. Is he as fast as I think? Is he as big as I think? Or as I've heard, or as the tape might suggest? You know what I mean? So nobody's going there to find new gems. They're going there to confirm what they already think about a guy. And it's probably from that vantage point, right, that most people see him as the number one pick.
Well, that's the way it should be, Bob. But there's been plenty of examples in the past where the guy shows up at the combine. He's off the radar, at least from a media perspective. Runs great. They talk about him for 2 hours in a row on NFL Network, and all of a sudden all this buzz builds, and maybe he gets overdrafted. I don't think that's the case with Myles Garrett.
You're not going to say the name Mike Mamula, are you?
No, but we all know I'm thinking it. And I don't think that's the case with Myles Garrett because he played in a big-time program, because everybody was watching him all year long. So my only thing is, we can't put too much stock into the 40-yard dash. Let's go back to the film and say, hey, you know what? On film, he looks quick, he looks fast, he looks powerful, he looks strong, but he also takes some plays off. If the ball's run away from him, he just kind of stops playing. There's some issues there. He was dealing with an ankle injury. He's had a couple of, you know, injuries over his 3 years at A&M. So he's not the cleanest prospect. I still think he's worth the number one pick in the draft. I still think there's a gap between him and whoever goes number two. But I think we forget about any questions we had when we're still in the kind of the haze of, right, oh my gosh, what a workout he did.
I got you. Scott Petrak talking NFL scouting combine with us, and we'll talk a little bit about draft picks and free agency, et cetera, et cetera. Jim Kushlin is with us here too, Scott, and he's got a question for you. Jim, go ahead.
And when I keep thinking, guys, of this Myles Garrett and every draft board I keep looking at, mock draft and whatnot, it feels like, and from what I've even gathered as well, it feels like that they're leaning in more of that direction. So it lends to the obvious follow-up. What are they going to do at quarterback? Are they going to hope that one of the guys amongst Trubisky and Deshaun Watson and maybe even Deshaun Kizer from originally Toledo, now Notre Dame, that he's available at 12? Are they going back in possibly, Scott, the free agency? I read something over the weekend that, okay, maybe Garoppolo will be available for the right price. So especially if they go get Myles Garrett at number one, what's going to happen with quarterback?
Well, that's what makes it tricky for the Browns, because you can't view, like you said, you can't view Myles Garrett in a vacuum, right? So, especially if you're the Browns. So is he worth, let's say he's the best player in the draft, is he that much better than the quarterback who will have a greater impact on your team? And that's a decision the Browns have to make, and I think it would be much easier for them if they were able to answer the quarterback problem before you get to the draft. And that means, to me, Jimmy Garoppolo. If you can get Jimmy Garoppolo, let's say for the 12th pick in the draft, then it clears everything up. You're set at quarterback. You think you have the guy. Then you can go, we're going to pick the best players. We're going to improve our defense. But until you find that answer at quarterback, I think it's in the back of your mind. And if you take Garrett at one and you stay at 12, and let's say the Browns love whoever it is, Trubisky, Watson, or Kaiser, he's probably going to be gone by number 12. So then what do you do at quarterback? Then you're just kind of hitting and hoping. And that's failed the Browns too many times. That's why I don't think you can just ignore the possibility of a quarterback at one until we get closer to the draft and we see what they do in free agency. If they sign, if they trade for Garoppolo or sign Tyrod Taylor if he becomes available, then you can say, okay, there's no way they're taking a guy at number one. Until then, I don't think you can completely remove it from the equation.
Let me get a couple of follow-ups on the quarterback position. The first one is the guys that you saw there. You got a chance to see them throw. You got a chance to see them run. You got a chance to see them do a lot of things. Deshaun Watson was there flinging it. I saw some tape on him. From your eyes, Scott, and I know you're not a pro player personnel director. You've been doing this a lot of years. You've seen a lot of prospects come and throw. Did anything you saw at the combine change your mind about the order of those three guys and which of them looks best to you?
Yeah, that's interesting, Bob. You know, the first thing you do at the combine, at least with the media and even with the teams, you get to talk to these guys. So the first time I stood in front of all three of those guys, I thought they handled themselves well. I thought Trubisky seemed a little, I don't know, staged to me. Maybe, you know, he talked about trying to portray himself as a franchise quarterback. It kind of felt like he had this script in his head. Now I'm going to come across as a franchise quarterback. Nice enough, carried himself well, didn't stumble, but that was the impression I got. I thought Deshaun Watson showed the most swagger, if you want to say the most confidence. He just looked comfortable being Deshaun Watson, talking and on the field. The way he threw the ball, his footwork looked good. And then Kaiser came across extremely smart to me. You know, he talked about how he's bunkering in, and he's going to explain to teams that it just was he didn't play well enough, didn't make enough plays. That's why they went 4-8 this year. Handled a tough Brian Kelly question well, I thought. So I was impressed by all of them. Maybe Watson, Kaiser, Trubisky in that order. Then you go on the field, and I think Trubisky's the most natural thrower when you combine accuracy and arm strength. But Watson looked good in the workout. Kaiser didn't look as good. He struggled with some accuracy. But when you go back and watch the film, and I've watched, I want to say, 5 or 6 games of each of these players, some of them multiple times, that's what shows up on film. They all have these question marks that make you think they're not worth the number one pick. You know, Trubisky's only played 13 starts, threw a couple of terrible interceptions in the bowl game. Watson just misses some throws that he should make. And Kaiser, you know, disappears in the fourth quarter, loses games that maybe he should win. So, you know, they all look like they have potential, but they're not ready yet. And I think that's a scary thought for a team like the Browns.
So, that being the case, you know, you just said yourself, if they can't get Garoppolo, you can't. Well, you said you might want to think about just doing a quarterback at number one. Who's going to impact your long-term your franchise more on a long-term basis? Is it a pass rusher like Garrett, or is it a quarterback just because of the nature of the position, even if he isn't ready just yet? Are you suggesting they might go with one of those three guys at number one so you don't have to see if the one guy you really like the best is still there at 12?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're definitely weighing those options right now. And another option, which I tend to like, is you take Garrett at number one, try to trade back up, whether you need to trade with the Jets at number 6 or back into the top 5, and then take your quarterback. So then you're getting the best player in the draft, the quarterback you feel is the best, and yeah, you might have to give up next year's number one, but I think this is a critical offseason for this franchise, and I just don't like the idea of them kicking the quarterback decision down the road. So I say be bold, get who you're looking for, because I don't think you can go one more season with such questions at quarterback. It just derails the whole year, and then I think it jeopardizes guys' jobs, Hugh Jackson's job, Sashi Brown's job.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And you know, we talk about Garoppolo because everybody talks about Garoppolo, and I, quite frankly, am not sure why. I have not seen enough to say that I think he would be the 12th best player in this draft, and I would take him number 12 if he was there. Therefore, go ahead and trade for him, you know, giving that pickup. But he is a high-profile backup. And as high-profile backups go, a name that has kind of emerged in the last 2 or 3 days as potentially being available is Mike Glennon down there in Tampa, who's sitting behind Jameis Winston and who's got more experience than Garoppolo does, who has done some very nice things and is very highly regarded by a lot of folks. Would it be worth maybe offering in trade something to them, you know, if the Garoppolo thing doesn't work out?
Well, he's going to be a free agent, Bob, so you're not going to have to trade anything.
Oh, he is a free agent. I thought he was a restricted free agent.
No, you can get him. The problem is people are talking about paying him $14 million.
Well, I know that's what Tampa was talking about paying him. That's the reason I thought he was still their property. But okay, continue.
I mean, they were going to offer him the most backup money, and now he's supposed going to hit the market.
Okay.
Look for a job as a starter. I was texting somebody in the league today who said how ridiculous that is. He's a quarterback expert. Mm-hmm. I think there's people in the league who like Mike Glennon. They think he has an upside. But you go back, he hasn't played in 2 years. Tampa, you know, he started games for Tampa, and Lovie Smith replaced him with Josh McCown. Then he went out and drafted Jameis Winston. So if they really thought, the guys that were around him every day, really thought he could play in this league, you wouldn't have seen that happen.
How do those things happen then? Like, how do guys go from being, you know, just moderate interest, lukewarm, he's okay, but they replace him, blah, blah, to suddenly he's the hot name?
Well, it's because there's nobody on the quarterback market, Bob. You look, it's Jimmy Garoppolo, who may not be available. It's Tyrod Taylor, who may not be available. But let's see, he is 12-12, I think, as a starter in his career. 6-1, not ideal, isn't great from the pocket. You know, you talk to people in Buffalo, it's like, he doesn't really throw with anticipation. You know, he kind of breaks down late in games. Well, how can you commit to that guy as your franchise quarterback? Then the names are Mike Glennon, Brian Hoyer, Case Keenum. So, you know, quarterback is so important. You're the Browns, and those guys are all probably upgrades over Robert Griffin III, but they're not the end answer. And that's what everybody needs to get to, is that end answer. So that's why a guy like Glennon, you think, hey, maybe we can find something in him. Maybe we, you know, he's still young enough. If we can find this diamond in the rough, we'll be okay. So you search and you search, but the reality is he's probably not the right guy.
Scott Petrak joining us, talking a little bit about the NFL draft, about the scouting combine, about some of the guys that he saw. Scott, who was off the radar? You know, we talked about that, not in a Mamula way, but I just mean, you know, he's not Garrett, you know, and he's not Leonard Fournette or Dalvin Cook or somebody like that. But who jumped out at you? And I don't care the position, but you can go high profile if you want. But who jumped out at you? You saw, man, that's a guy that I really hope the Browns take a look at that maybe nobody talked about before.
You know what, Bob? There's so many corners and safeties that I'm not going to get all their names right. But let me just say, I'm watching all the workouts today, and there were four defensive backs in the second group. So they're all the T's and W's. Mm-hmm. That I'm watching them drop back and flip and go get the ball. And I said, I like that guy, that guy, and that guy. One guy's from Utah. One guy's from LSU, who I think could be a candidate for the Browns high in the draft. The guy from North Carolina State. Just, they're so deep. These positions are so deep, and I think that did get reaffirmed at the combine. You know, you hear these experts say it, oh, it's deep, it's deep, it's deep. You know, okay, whatever. You know, it just kind of goes in one ear, not the other. Then you see him work out, and you see guy after guy after guy look or show the athleticism that you need. And you go, okay, the Browns or whoever's looking for corner and safety help, they can find it in the draft. And I think that was a good thing, especially for the Browns, because they need probably two safeties and a corner at least.
Well, they have so many needs, which is one of the reasons why last year they traded some of their top picks to fill so many of the needs. They had 14 draft picks they ended up making. I think 12 of them were wide receivers, and they still don't have really game playing. Well, which you know what takes me into the Terrell Pryor question, Scott Petrak. Terrell Pryor, according to most recent reports, drawing interest from the Steelers, the Giants, the Niners, the Eagles, and the Titans. The Browns obviously are not franchising him. They're not going to pay this guy the average of the top five players at that position in the league when he's only had 1 year of actually playing the position on a full-time basis. So what is going to happen? Is he going to go to one of those teams, or are the Browns going to find a way to get a deal for him?
Here's what I think happens. I think he's going to get to free agency, right? I mean, it's noon. You're allowed to start negotiating with other teams tomorrow at noon, so I don't think something happens before then. I think Terrell goes out, finds out what the market is going to bear, and goes back to the Browns and say, hey, whoever is willing to pay me $12 million a year for 4 years with $28 million guaranteed or whatever that number is, and it's up to Sashi Brown to match it or not. I think Sashi would match it. That's a feeling I get. But you never know. When a guy gets to free agency, I don't think you can take any comfort in, yeah, he wants to come back, we think he likes us, because that proves too many times not to be the case. A guy gets kind of, you know, he gets wooed by another team. He winds up making the move. So I think it was a mistake for the Browns not to franchise Terrell. Even
Dude,
if they had
really?
To pay him 15, I do. Even if they had to pay him for 1 year,
Bob. Is it just out of desperation because of the position that they're in? Because, I mean, Julio Jones is making $15 million a year, for crying out loud. Antonio Brown just signed a deal that pays him those numbers. The idea that Terrell Pryor, who has never, ever in a million years even thought about the kind of production that those guys provide for their teams, would be making an average salary next to theirs is crazy to me, even if it's only for 1 year.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that, and that's a valid point. To me, every year we get to free agency, the numbers go through the roof, especially with the salary cap rising at the percentage that it is. So I think old numbers are a little odd. They're out of date. And if the Browns have all the salary cap money in the world, which they do, they have a huge need across the roster, including a receiver, I think it's worth it. Plus, even if you had to pay him, that's fine, but that gives you leverage to sign the long-term deal that you hope to sign in the first place. I don't think if you'd franchise him, Terrell was automatically going to play at 15.7 for 1 year. I think you could have worked out a long-term deal. I just liked it as to be safe. If that's your insurance policy, get him to sign or, you know, franchise him and then work out a deal. But the Browns went a different way, and I'm just afraid that it's going to cost him.
Scotty, last thing, because we're already at 4 o'clock and we're just about out of time. They've got to address offensive line. We know what a train wreck that was. We know Cameron Irving cannot play in this league. He can't play tackle, he can't play guard, and he can't play center. So two things. One, anybody jump out at you at the combine that you think they might look at to play offensive line because they lost Alex Mack and Mitchell Schwartz last offseason? Two, what about Nick Mangold, former Buckeye who was surprised by his release by the Jets? Word is teams are looking at him to be a guard. They don't think he can play a center anymore. I think either one he could play for the Cleveland Browns. Your thoughts there?
Yeah, well, Bob, it's not a great offensive line draft class. I mean, obviously you can find a guy here or there, but overall the depth is not great. That's why I'd like him to go free agency. I like Nick Mangold. If he's willing to come to a team that's not expected to do well, and kind of be here trying to take a team from losing to winning, mm-hmm. I think he's great. I think he's plugged him in at center for 2 years. He can teach the young guys on the Browns roster. They have Austin Ryder, Anthony Fabiano. I think he'd be the perfect stopgap. If not Nick Mangold, Zeitler from Cincinnati is going to command big bucks. It might be $12 million a year, but you can plug him in at guard. If John Greco comes back from Lisfranc, you move him to center, and then you can figure out right tackle. Maybe Irving's a right tackle, or you got Sean Coleman and you drafted in the third round last year. To me, you have to figure out center or guard, and the best way to do that is free agency.
Yeah, I can respect that. I don't think Irving can play right tackle. I don't think he can play right guard. I don't think he can play left guard. He can play left out. I think he can play left out and do that very well.
Well, we know he can't play center, and we know he can't play guard.
No, we know he can, honestly. Honestly, they've just got to just chalk that up as a Justin Gilbert terrible, terrible, terrible first-round draft pick. Scott Petrak breaking down the NFL scouting combine from Indianapolis and a whole lot more. Scott, always a pleasure, my friend. Thanks very much for your insight.
Thanks, Frank.
Have a great day. Thanks very much. All right, it's 4:02, so we're a little bit late. Let's get caught up now with SportsCenter. Come back and get some of your phone calls on these stories and more right here on ESPN.
Drummond slams for two. Caldwell Pope, an opportunity for a four-point play.
Well, this is one of the things KCP does so well, coming off those screens.
The Pistons continuing their playoff push. They have won two straight.
You know, on a one-game thing, if it helped at all. I mean, but Reggie played well, and Ish played well. They both played really well. I thought we had good energy throughout. We had a lot of respect for them, and even when they're down two starters, I mean, the ones things you know about, really since Brett's been here, how hard Philadelphia plays and the energy they bring to the game, that we would need to match that. I think our guys took that to heart. I mean, we had great, great respect for them.
To have fun, you know, you hear people talking about four-point shots, something that's not about to happen in the NBA, but maybe in an All-Star game. Maybe there's a few spots on the floor where it's a four-point shot. Maybe there's a half-court shot in the last minute that is 10 points. I don't know. I mean, maybe those are crazy ideas. I mean, I encourage people, you know, adam@nba.com. You know, send in your ideas. We will change it by next year because I think it shouldn't be playoff intensity. The guys should be playing. And I think that's why I don't think it's a millennial Gen X issue. I think they would have more fun. They want to play. They want to compete.
I don't know. I've never been a part of one. It's been a long time since I've been probably since high school. You know, we had our band play throughout timeouts, things of that nature. So I'm not sure. You know, they said it was doing it for just to get the authentication of the game itself. I thought that's a pretty cool idea. Get it work. I don't know. You know, but listen, they can do whatever they want, and you know, to see how it goes if they try something. So I'm not against that. I mean, you give fans an opportunity just to hear that. You know, the sneakers, the ball, the shot, the moan and grunts, and the players calling out plays, things of that nature. You know, I'm all about authenticity. But also, you know, we know that music is also a part of basketball. You know, that in-game, you know, things of that nature going to Jumbotron is all part of the game. And, you know, so I don't know. I've never been a part of it, so I don't know.
Change the flow of the game, it changed everything. You get so used to playing the game a certain way, completely change that. I think, to me, I think it was disrespectful to everyone from Michael Levine to Rick Welts and all these people who've done these things to change the game. You know, from an entertainment perspective, you know, and get a game a great vibe, that's completely disrespectful. You advance things in the world to make it better. You don't go back to what was bad.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, it is indeed. Thanks for joining us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We've got Paul Keels, the voice of the Buckeyes, going to be joining us in about 20 minutes or so. Paul is going to talk about the 11th seed in the Big Ten tournament, which is coming up on Wednesday. It starts on Wednesday in D.C. I don't like that location, by the way, at all. It ought to be in the Midwest. It ought to be in Indianapolis or in Columbus or someplace like that, or Champaign or Bloomington. I don't care. Somewhere in the Midwest where the Big Ten belongs. But anyway, it's going to be in D.C., and the 11-seeded Buckeyes will take on the 14-seeded Rutgers squad on one side of the bracket in the first round. Four lowest seeds in the Big Ten have to do battle in that first round. Then 12 and 13 is Nebraska and Penn State. If the Buckeyes survive Rutgers, Northwestern awaits. They are the sixth seed in the bottom part of that bracket. So that's where we are. If you're wondering, Michigan is the eighth seed, and they play Illinois in the second round. Michigan State will await the winner of Nebraska and Penn State in that first-round matchup that we talked about. Okay, I do want to talk a little more basketball now in this hour. Really good hour of football talk in the first. But I want to go back and talk a little bit about Adam Silver and some of what you just heard in the montage there. Adam Silver is the commissioner of the National Basketball Association, obviously. And he was talking about how terrible the All-Star game. You remember the day after the All-Star game on this program, I let them have it. The league is in trouble if this is the kind of crap product that they're going to put out on a regular basis. And that, I mean, that was literally unwatchable. Not very entertaining, not just a little bit too relaxed for me. Unwatchable. Horrible. Terrible. I mean, put on fried green tomatoes. Bad. I'd rather watch that. Put on The Notebook. Pick your chick flick. I don't care what it is. I'd rather stare at a wall. I mean, it was that bad, and I turned it off, and I started to read a book instead. That's how bad the All-Star game was. Well, finally, now 2 weeks later, a little bit late there, Adam, but, you know, I guess better late than never, the NBA's commissioner said, yeah, well, we're going to look to tweak some things because the All-Star game was kind of bad. And this is what he said.
To have fun, you know, you hear people talking about four-point shots, something that's not about to happen in the NBA, but maybe in an All-Star game. Maybe there's a few spots on the floor where it's a four-point shot.
That's a terrible idea. What the hell does that do to solve the problems? Does this guy think before he speaks? Part of the problem in the All-Star game is nobody played any defense, so everybody launched 40-foot threes already. Now you're just going to give them more incentive to take long threes and then uncontested dunks? Why don't you just give them 4 points for a dunk? 4 points for a dunk and 4 points for a shot that's from 30 feet. Hey, that's a hell of an idea. How would that possibly increase the interest level in this unwatchable game? Adam?
Maybe there's a half-court shot in the last minute that is 10 points. I don't know.
Hey, that's another hell of an... honest to God, is this guy just tone deaf? Seriously, for a dude that has the world's largest ears, you would think he would listen a little bit better. It's not about more long shots that we want. That's not what we want to fix this game. We want the players to play basketball. We want them to compete with one another. We want to see the world's best players going at one another to see who is better. That's what an All-Star game is for. not for gimmicky four-point shots or 10-point shots. For God's sake, Adam.
Maybe there's a half-court shot in the last minute that is 10 points. I don't know. I mean, maybe those are crazy ideas. I mean, I encourage people, you know, adam@nba.com. You know, send in your ideas.
I'm not joking about that. Seriously, anybody with an email account right now, adam@nba.com, send him a note. Tell him he's an idiot and if he even considers any of those things.
We will change it by next year because I think it shouldn't be playoff intensity. The guys should be playing, and I think that's why I don't think it's a millennial Gen X issue. I think they would have more fun. They want to play. They want to compete.
If they wanted to play and they wanted to compete, they would play and they would compete. It is a millennial thing. It is a tired, tired idea, and a bunch of millennial snowflake generation people just have no earthly idea what it means to challenge themselves and what it means to do the right thing and what it means to compete, what it means to earn their money. It's give me, I'm going to do the least amount possible in order for the best possible reward. Give me my check. Let me go on about my way without having to expend any energy. To me, it is a millennial thing. When Isaiah Thomas was playing point guard for the Eastern Conference, and I'm sorry to keep going back to this, but when Isaiah Thomas was doing this and Bird was on one wing and Julius Erving was on another wing and Lane Beer would be in the game or Parrish and Kareem was guarding him and Magic was on, those guys did not do this crap. Don't tell me it's not a millennial generation thing. It is absolutely a millennial generation thing. Those guys went at one another. Now, did they do it? How did Silver phrase that? Not playoff intensity, I think it was.
You know, adam@nba.com. You know, send in your ideas. We will change it by next year because I think it shouldn't be playoff intensity.
Yeah,
the guys should be playing.
It shouldn't be playoff intensity, but it should be intensity. There should be regular season intensity at the very least or a modicum of that amount. There has to be something because doing it the way they do it right now is just an embarrassment to A, the game, B, the players, and C, to anybody who devotes an hour and a half or 2 hours or 3 hours of their time to watching it. Christian, what do you make of Silver's comments?
Obviously, the only part I agree on is the part where not necessarily playoff intensity, but you have to have some kind of intensity. And you have to. This is something we've all been talking about for the last bunch of years after every NBA All-Star game about what can be done to make it a better game because it is complete trash right
they
now.
They shot
no one's
122 three-pointers.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous.
122 threes were taken. And he's saying, let's put in a four-point shot.
Yeah.
From what, 10 feet further back than the three-point shot?
And that's not going to
improve basketball? Are you serious?
Yeah, and that's not the kind of thing that we're talking about when we're thinking that. And in terms of what to use to fix the All-Star game, the problem is not how many shots they're taking up or dunks or any of that other nonsense. The problem is nobody gives any effort specifically on the defensive end, as we've cataloged over and over and over
it's
again.
It's like they just don't even care.
Four-point shots don't do anything for that.
They don't even care that what they're doing is not watchable. I mean, honest to God, do they really think that an uncontested windmill dunk is going to get anybody excited? You know what would get excited? A windmill dunk over a defender who's going up to try to stop him.
Right.
You know what would get me more excited? The guy who's going up to defend him, blocking that dunk attempt.
Yeah.
You know, it's a competitive game. It's about competition. It's not just about watch my athleticism. It doesn't take that much athleticism to do what they're doing. I mean, it would be, you have to be trying to beat the other guy, not just do it to do it. It would be like having a bowling match where they didn't keep the score and count the pins. It's just, watch this one. I can make the ball spin three different ways on the way down the lane.
Right.
And I don't know why I'm making a bowling analogy, but my point is any sport, it's like if you didn't have any resistance or if you didn't have any reason to count the scores, then what is the purpose of doing the event? And that's essentially what it is when it's 192 to 188. And I think they're 2 weeks late and $20 short by just talking about this now, but at least they're talking about it. Steve Kerr as well. Go ahead, Jim.
I'm sitting here trying to think of what, you know, how we know what the problem is. You know what I'm saying? We know that it's the intensity, that it's the
no problem that a 10-point shot from half court can't cure.
That's not.
I can't believe he said that out loud.
That's not going to fix the problem. That's not the issue here. The issue is how, and quite frankly, I don't have a good answer for this. I, in a way, as I've been trying to think about this, You know, what
well, Steve
could
Kerr,
you...
Steve Kerr spoke, I think, better of it or on this, I think, than even Silver did. Would you agree? Steve Kerr called it a flat-out joke.
Right.
He said, and I quote, I think we could talk about gimmicks and talk about anything we want, whether it's the money or involves charity, but it just comes down to the players taking it seriously. I don't think they have to be out there taking charges, but it's a collective thing. I think they have to decide, maybe with the Players Association, they have to decide what they want that game to look like. And right now, it's a joke.
He's right.
Steph Curry, by the way, responded to the Adams. He is 100% right. Steph Curry responded to all this by saying, nah, a 10-point shot. Half-court shot would make it worse. 4 point, and then Curry said a 4-point shot, maybe, but that's still kind of enticing people just to test stuff out. Yeah, to launch even longer shots,
yep,
and embarrass the game even further, for goodness sakes. Let's see. Draymond Green has a simple solution to put the competitiveness back into the game. What do you think he said, Jim? Give me more money! He said, raise the money. That's how you're going to make it more competitive. I'm serious. Instead of giving everybody $25,000 and $50,000 to the winners, you know, give everybody $1 million. Let the sponsors pony up $1 million a player and tell them the winners get the bigger share of it.
See, that's not going to do anything.
And that's
either.
Not going to make you look better to your fans, by the way.
These are all either, as Steve Kerr called them, gimmicks, or they're things on the periphery that won't fix the underlying problem, which is effort given, particularly on one end of the court, during the game itself. And the only idea that I have, and I don't know if it's a good one or not, is maybe scrap how the game is played altogether. Here's what I mean. It's still divided by conferences. They haven't done World and whatever, say, the NHL All-Star Game in recent years have done. But there's 12 guys on each roster, right? So that's 24. Maybe you break them all off into groups of threes, have a mini tournament where they're all playing each other for I have no idea.
There's no way to televise something like that.
TV would, exactly. TV, that's why I said I don't know if it's a good idea.
Yeah, and then they're not even playing basketball. I mean, I don't think we need to reinvent the wheel here. You know, we don't need 4-point shots and 10-point shots, and we don't need 3-on-3 tournaments. What we need is these guys just to say, you know what? I got a little pride here. You know, we need LeBron James to look at Kevin Durant and say, come on, come get some. Come get some. Basically, I'm going to D you up right now. Me and you, one-on-one, we're going to play until coach takes us out, and I'm going to go at you, and you're going to go at me. And we need Chris Paul to say that to Kyrie Irving, and we need Russell Westbrook to say that to John Wall, et cetera, et cetera. So let's go, man. Let's go. The same damn way they did, again, back when I talk about when the game used to actually be so much better to watch. Steve Kerr said, and I just like giving quotes of guys when they're really on the mark here. Steve Kerr, because he was, of course, the coach for the Western Conference this year. And he witnessed it up close and personal.
2 years in a row, actually.
Players failing.
Watched it up close and personal.
Well, then how was he? Because you're not supposed to be able to do it 2 years in a row. That's why Brad Stevens was the coach instead of Tyronn Lue.
You know, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah. Good call.
Anyway. He witnessed up close and personally the disregard of players failing to attempt to even make the most routine of basketball plays. He said it's embarrassing that this is being played. Quote, in my mind, what's happened to everybody is everybody's trying to be so cool out there that you almost feel guilty if you play hard. That's it in a nutshell. Nobody wants to go out there and lock down on somebody and say, come on, bring it. Because everybody else is like, man, what's your problem, dude? Just chill, man. We're just out here to chill and have fun. And that's exactly what it is. Nobody wants to be that guy. Maybe back to Kerr. Maybe the best thing to do would be to watch a tape of an All-Star game from 1985. Gee, who's been saying that for all of these years? Because it was a different game back then. It wasn't like guys were diving on the floor for loose balls and taking charges, but it was competitive. And I think you're just as likely to get hurt not trying than you are competing at 75%. And that's all they need to do. Compete at 75%. Right now they're at like 10%. And that is embarrassing. Klay Thompson said fear of being injured is a factor. You don't want to get anyone hurt or anyone injured in a game that has no implications. I have no idea how to fix the problem. I don't know. Incentives, raise the... There it is again. These greedy SOBs. Raise the money. Give us more money. That'll make guys play harder. No, it wouldn't. Not if you all agreed, hey, we're all making more money now, but we're still not playing harder. You have to want it because you want to be a professional. That's all it is. It's about being a professional. And these guys don't want to do it. And that's why I'm just so disgusted by them. And the whole weekend was such crap. Jimmy in Toledo. You're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Jimmy, go ahead. What's up? Jimmy, yeah. Got me, buddy.
I got a great idea because everybody pretty much agrees the season's too long and most of these games don't mean anything anyways, right?
Correct.
Would we agree with that? They make way too much money now. It's not 1985. They pal around during the year. It's just a different world, okay? So this is what you do. Most all-star games, at least, you know, they use, like, the Eastern Conference. You're going to get three Cavaliers at least, right? Over in the West, what are you going to get? You're going to get four or five of them guys from
four
the Warriors, right?
Yep, four Warriors.
So let's change the rule. Let's do like baseball did, and we'll make a very interesting dynamic happen.
What's that?
We'll tie home court advantage in the finals.
No!
Now listen, just listen.
No, Jimmy, you're killing me, bro. All right, go on. I'll listen to you, but I'm already telling you I'm going to hate it.
I'm talking, you want to make the All-Star game interesting. I'm not making it rational. I'm saying interesting. That would make it interesting because maybe not all the guys want to play defense, but I guarantee you the Cavaliers and the teams that are in the West that are looking to get to the finals, namely
tell me how well that would play for LeBron James if he and Kyrie and Love, let's say, are out there busting their tails
because
home court advantage means something to them. But John Wall is letting Russell Westbrook drive down the middle of the lane and dunk with no defensive resistance whatsoever.
So then
how do you think that's going to go?
This is beautiful. Then that makes me want to watch the next Cavaliers. Washington Wizards team in the regular season because I wouldn't normally do it, but I want to see what they're going to do to John Wall for doing that.
I like your thinking outside the box. No, I do.
Your question was how do we make these games more interesting?
But here's the thing: not at the price of making the NBA Finals a sham, and that's what it would be, and that's the problem.
I don't think it'd be a sham if you got there.
Hold on. Let's say the Cavaliers broke the Warriors NBA single season wins record and won 75 games. They go 75 and what would it be? 7. And then let's say the Warriors or the Spurs are 65 and whatever, and the Cavaliers are clear. But because in the All-Star game, the Cavaliers allowed too many uncontested dunks, now the Cavs have to play Game 7 on the road instead of at home, which they earned by having the best record. No, that makes the whole thing a sham.
Well, you know what? Then you're not going to make the All-Star game watchable, and you're not going to make most of the regular season games all that watchable or interesting until like the last 2 months of the season. They make too much money.
Well, you're right about that. You're right. The games aren't going to be more interesting, with the exception of a very few. You know, some of the regular season games will be interesting.
I don't begrudge them their money, but this isn't the old days, man, where these guys have all this, you know, like hell, Magic and Bird came in the NBA. They had a rivalry going back to college. Half these guys said they don't even go to college but for one dime.
I know, you're right. That's very true. And that's a big part of it. The immaturity of these young millennial kids. That's a very good part. Hey, Jimmy, thanks for the call, brother. I got to get a few more people on before we get to Paul Keels. Terry in Sylvania next. Hey, Terry, go ahead.
I totally agree. I left your screener that same comment, which he made.
Which one? Which was what?
About using baseball's terminology.
Oh, tying it to the... Yeah, but you see what baseball did last year, though?
These people feel about their common folk, you know, the players.
Yeah.
What they think about them. That's the other aspect of that. And I'll go with
Hold on. Let me point this out, Terry, before you finish your thought. What baseball did last year was criminal to the Cubs. Now, I'm a Cleveland Indians fan. I have been my whole life, okay? But I was glad to take it, the fact that the Indians got home field advantage in the World Series. But the Cubs won, what, 110 games? The Cubs clearly had the best season in all of baseball. Game 7 should have been at Wrigley Field. The idea that they had to go on the road and win in Cleveland, their first championship, after being the best team all year long, was criminal last year. The Cubs got hosed. They absolutely should not have had to play games 1 and 2 in Cleveland and game 7 in Cleveland. They got screwed out of that. And even as an Indians fan, I knew that was a screw job. I don't want to do that and take the home field, or in this case in basketball, the home court away from the best team based on a meaningless All-Star game.
Bob, just cancel the game. It's a sham.
Well, it is that. And you know what?
Okay.
You know what, Terry? You said something that people have been saying about the Pro Bowl in the NFL for 20 years. Nobody will miss it, and they haven't done that either, but they should. The Pro Bowl should be discontinued. The NBA All-Star Game should be discontinued, at least until they agree to do what, again, going back to the days of Isaiah and even before that, where they actually played at around a 75-80% level, and they actually did compete with one another. People enjoyed those All-Star Games, not the garbage that these young kids are doing today. Terry, I got to run, brother. Thanks for the call. Bruce is in McClure. Bruce, you're on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Go ahead.
All right, Bob. I got an idea. We got these players that always talk about wanting to play for more money, give us more money.
Yeah.
Why don't the All-Star players pony up a little bit and winner take all?
Ooh.
That'll intensify the game.
Now that's an idea. Put their own money in the pot. Everybody makes the All-Star game, kicks in, you know, a mil. And then the winning team takes the whole daggone pot. So you're all essentially everybody has a chance to make a mil or lose a mil. That's not bad. Right. Put it all
you
in one big
mil
pot
or
in
nothing.
One kitty.
I think that would actually intensify the game and make it a better watch.
Yeah, because, you know, that's better than just offering to pay them more. Because if they're just getting paid more, they can still be lazy because, you know what, if we lose, so what? I already got mine. But now it's, if I lose, I'm losing mine. I'm going to actually lose a million of my own dollars or half a million or whatever they decide to do.
Yeah, whatever
that's
they decide to go
idea.
With.
You realize, of course, the Players Association would never go for that.
Well, what the Players Association can do is kick in a little bit themselves, and each team can kick in for charity that way.
Yeah, now bingo, you said the magic word. If it was for charity, that's the only way you'd have a shot at this, where, you know, the winners get their $2 million or whatever to go to the charity of their choice. And I even heard Stephen A. Smith say this about a week or two ago. He said, you know what you do, especially if they're kids' charities, you bring kids from that charity to the game and give them all courtside seats so that you
That'd
know
awesome.
That if you go out there and screw around, you're disappointing that kid. That poor kid right there is the one that you're going to rob of their possibilities if you screw around. I love the way you think, Bruce. I appreciate the phone call. I got to get a quick timeout here. Got to talk to Paul Keels coming up. And you know what? Before we do that timeout, I also have give you a pair of walleye tickets. I got walleye tickets for the March 19th game at Huntington Center against Tulsa. If you'd like a pair of tickets to see the hockey game, call 866-240-1065. Caller 5. Those tickets are yours. Keels joins us next.
Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
It is the final segment of our Monday afternoon edition of the Extravaganza. That means we have time for just a few minutes with the voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes, Mr. Paul Keels, joining us. He, of course, calls all the action on the Ohio State Radio Network. Hey, Paul, how are you this afternoon?
Good, Bob. How you doing?
I am great. Thanks for making some time for us. Sorry we got to you a little bit late. Let's make our time quality instead of worrying about the quantity of it. Before we start talking about the upcoming Big Ten tournament and where the Buckeyes have to play in the first round, let's talk about the season finale on Saturday. Boy, I'll tell you what, you know, you don't get any bonus points for moral victories or anything like that, but they were getting blown out. The Buckeyes were in the first half, down 14 at the break to Indiana, and came back to make this a 96-92 game. Two-part question. One, how did they start off so flat in a game that was as important as trying to finish on a three-game winning streak, you know, as that would have been? And then, B, what turned around for them in the second half?
Well, I think the start of it, Bob, involved Indiana just catching fire, going up 11-0, and, you know, I think they made their first six or seven shots. It was stunning to see how hot Indiana was and playing a lot like the team that beat Kansas and North Carolina earlier this year. What got Ohio State back into it? Forcing turnovers, which Indiana's been very prone to, and scoring off those turnovers. And, you know, you saw a couple of people, especially Jaquan Lyle and Jayshon Tate, get on a roll. Once they were able to get that lead, I think it was at 62-61, they just couldn't keep it. They had a couple plays and went awry, and then, but defensively was the big problem. They just couldn't have enough of a defensive presence to make Indiana uncomfortable enough to not shoot the way they do.
Yeah, well, with both teams pushing up near 100, it wasn't really much defense on either side. I mean, it was, was it just the pace of the game, just a fast-paced game, and nobody really, you know, forcing it to settle down into playing lockdown half-court defense?
You know, I don't know that it was the pace. I think it was because what helped Ohio State get back into it, in the beginning of the second half, they caught fire. Like Indiana started the game. By the way, that
13-3 run to start the half, right?
Yeah, and that 96 points, that's a record for an opponent in the history of the Value City Arena for most points scored. So, you know, a lot of three-point shooting that went into all of it. It just kind of showed you the roller coaster ride that both of these teams have been on this year.
Yeah, that's a very good point, too. And the records obviously would speak to that as they are both identical at 17-14 and 7-11 in the conference. But, again, you know, the Ohio State loss puts them in a position where they end up as the 11 seed, and they don't get that automatic bye to the second round, if you want to call it a bye. They don't have to play that first round. The bottom four seeds square off 12-13, Nebraska and Penn State on the top half of that bracket down in D.C. And Ohio State at 11 takes on Rutgers in 14, whereas Indiana gets all the way into the second round, and they got to face number 7 Iowa. Does it? You know, what is your opinion of the fact that the Buckeyes have to play that first night?
Well, it's kind of the fruit of what they earned, and hopefully it's an opportunity for them to, you know, capitalize against the team they beat earlier this year. Although they had to struggle to beat Rutgers, and Rutgers is playing better basketball. Hopefully, right now, what it is it'll get them to play with a little edge. They're hopefully to play a little better defensively. And if they're fortunate to get by Rutgers, then they draw Northwestern, whom they lost to, but another game in which they played very well, played very competitively, and the issues of the foul line caused them some problems. So, you know, we've seen this team all of a sudden get on some mini runs, i.e. the two-game winning streak they had before Saturday.
Right.
So hopefully that's something they can do and regain a little of that momentum. Right now, Bob, I think what they're doing is playing for a better seed in the NIT, unless they go on a miraculous five-game run. And win the whole darn thing, but realistically, that's what they're looking at. Right,
yeah, I don't think anybody's expecting that. I don't even know if Thad Mott is really expecting that. As you say, they want to get as good of a seat as they can get to get into the NIT and win a couple of games in this tournament. But going back to Saturday real quick, and again, the fact that they were able to close that big gap at halftime and make it a competitive game and to lose by four. I know, as I said my initial question to you, there's no moral victories, but is there a motivational thing there? Does that give them a little bit of, you know what, hey, guys, we got down, but we fought back. We're in fighting mode, and we're ready to go into this tournament and play the way we're capable of? Or does all that go away once the regular season ends and now it's everybody's 0-0 going into the tournament?
I think there's something you take from it, Bob, but it's the same things we've been talking about all year. This team has shown that at times – they can play very, very good basketball, but then all of a sudden they'll not make the smartest play or they'll not make the right play and all of a sudden curb themselves. So, you know, I think if you look at it, not just Saturday and erasing that deficit, but all season, you know, whether it's against Purdue, both games against Maryland, both games against Michigan State, against Virginia, we've seen that this team, and that's the head-scratcher, they've shown the ability to play very good basketball against very good teams, and hopefully they can recapture that and stage enough of it to be able to win a couple of games there.
Talking Ohio State basketball and Big Ten tournament basketball as we are now starting championship week, and of course Selection Sunday is now just 6 days away. Jim Cushlin is with us as well. Jim, go ahead.
And with that note, even though they'll probably be in NIT after, I think all of us hope at least two Big Ten tournament games getting past Rutgers. By the way, the winner of the Ohio State-Rutgers game will end up getting Northwestern on Thursday. And then you're going to have some NIT games coming up because, Paul, I do think that they're going to the NIT, probably hosting a game, maybe a three seed, something in that ballpark. But it also means that we're getting close to the end of careers of some various seniors. And obviously, for us here in Toledo, the name that jumps out at us is Mark Loving. He's had some ups and downs over the course of his Buckeye career. Talk to me about what you've been able to see out of him these last 4 years.
Well, and that's really it, Jim. It has been ups and downs. And, you know, I think if you remember a couple of years ago in the middle of the season, Mark had a three-game suspension. And before that, he was playing lights-out basketball. And it just really took him a while to kind of regain his stroke after that suspension. You know, you remember him for the game-winning basket he had at Nebraska earlier this year. Had some big baskets in the last few weeks. Maybe not his best game Saturday against Indiana, but really had been on a roll. And I think Mark has been a young man that he's not very vocal. He's not very outward with his emotions, but he's kind of led in his own way. And a guy that I think has really, you know, brought some class and really he's seen some great wins at Ohio State. He's seen some frustrating times, but the guy that, you know, I think typifies being an Ohioan, what it is to be a Buckeye and come play for the school that you grew up following.
Paul, quickly, just a preview of Wednesday night, and you talked about how they did beat Rutgers. It was a 70-64 game. People think because they're the last seed, Rutgers, you know, that this is a walkover game. It's not. You know, they might be the bottom of the Big Ten, but, you know, they're at 14-17. It's not that much of a difference from a 17-14 Buckeyes team, just in terms of the overall record. And we know that there are different schedules and so on, but still, the point is, this is a mid-double-digit win team. They're not a walkover for anybody. So what do you see happening on Wednesday?
Well, you know, a team that should have beaten Wisconsin earlier this year, coming off an impressive win at home over Illinois in their last game. They've got a couple of guys, Corey Sanders and Mike Williams and even Dwayne Freeman that can all of a sudden really catch fire and give you big bunches of points. So, you know, they're a team that's got nothing to lose. You figure they're going to be playing fast and loose and coming in confident after a win. So, you know, not a very deep team. They've got size. Some of their big guys can really create quite a physical presence, but yeah, Rutgers got nothing to lose.
No doubt about it, and the Buckeyes have everything to gain. Well, not everything to gain, but a lot to gain, as you say.
Get a win,
maybe a couple of wins in this tournament, and get yourself a nice opportunity in the NIT to finish this season out on a great note for those seniors that Jim Cushlin just mentioned. Paul, we'll be listening to the call on Wednesday, and everyone after that. Hopefully there will be more. We appreciate your time this afternoon. Thank you, my friend.
Take care, guys.
You got it. Paul Keel's the voice of the Buckeyes right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. That's all the time we've got. I apologize for anybody I may have left on hold, but the clock is the clock, and we are all slaves to it. We must do what it says. And it says we need to shut up and make room for drive time and Mike Miller, which is exactly what we'll do.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.